Good afternoon, everyone. This is Adam from Ukraford24 with my, I believe it's my sixth club now. No, it's not. It is my sixth club on now. Welcome to Scotland series. Today, I've come to the beautiful town of Kirkcaldy on the East Coast to meet Robbie. How are you, Robbie? Good afternoon.
I'm okay, thanks. Thanks for having me on, first of all. I'm doing okay.
Now, Robbie Thompson to you. He's a goalkeeper at Raith Rovers. He's had a fantastic career so far. I'm going to look forward to having a chat with him today. Now, before we get started, though, big thank you to always to Stel at Shoot the Defence. Without you, Stel, we wouldn't be able to put out all these podcasts. And thank you for your hard work. Now, Robbie, you spent a majority of your youth career at Celtic. How did that all start for you, and what was the experience like playing for such a great historic club?
It was brilliant. I was one of the lucky ones to sort of get picked up at a very early age. So from the sort of age of about 8, I was playing boys club, and I was doing okay. And I played a bit of season at boys club level in Falkirk. That was my local sort of town in Scotland. And I just got picked up by a scout. You'd be surprised, there's always someone watching. And then from the age of 8, I was straight into the academy setup. And I just like to say on record, it was one of the best sort of life experiences any young child could get. I was one of the lucky ones to go right through the system. So from under 8s right up into training with the first team level every day. I was lucky enough to sort of get on the bench a couple of times at a first team level. So I went through the full rig out, every single level. So I had a fantastic grounding as a young footballer. I had so many good experiences. I travelled the world by the time I was 20. We used to go on loads of tournaments. And some of the coaches and some of the players I played with and some of the experiences I had in general were second to none. And I couldn't have wished for a better footballing upbringing.
So what was it like in a normal week then in the Celtic youth setup? You know, how many times were you there? What was the impact on school and your daily life?
Well, I was always 2 or 3 times a week. My mum and dad committed a fantastic amount of their time to take me to and from training and games. I'm sure we're going to speak about it. My dad's a professional footballer as well, so he was at his training, and then he was driving back and taking me to my training. And it's not until I become an adult now you realise how much a commitment it was for your family. So I'm forever thankful for them. But it was generally 2 or 3 times a week, and a weekend normally, sort of Easter school holidays or end of the season, we would get tournaments. So we'd go away there. And then I was very fortunate that, from a sense, that the late great Tommy Burns took a little bit of a liking to me. And from when I was younger, so I had my professional contract when I was 13. So in terms of my schooling and stuff, I knew from the age of 13 I was going into a full-time environment when I was 15, 16. So, but I was lucky I had a good grounding from my parents that they would never let me switch off in terms of school. I managed to leave school with still some hires when a lot of players sort of switch off and go, oh, I've got my contract, that's me, I don't need to try at school anymore. So I'm quite fortunate that I left school with some qualifications, and then I went full-time when I was 15. But on my last year when I was at school, I only went to school 4 days a week. Managed to get a day release, so I would only go to school, and I would get a Thursday off to go into Celtic and play football, which was the end of all my friends, which I sort of rubbed in the face a wee bit. But so that was my sort of upbringing. So it was pretty religious all the way through from when I was 8 until I went in a full time environment.
Just before we move on, you mentioned preferential contract there. That's the first time I've heard of something like that. Can you just What actually is that?
Well, normally the way it worked when we were younger is the ones that would be marked with a high level potential, they would get offered terms when they were younger.
Okay.
Just to sort of try and keep them at the club. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate to sort of get one of those contracts. So I knew that I had that there. It could easily have been taken away from me, although I had it at a young age. If my performances dipped or my behaviour dropped or I was a disruptive person, Celtic would have been quick enough to take that away from me. But I was really grateful for Tommy Burns to sort of committing to me at that early age, and he was fantastic at unearthing talent at a young age. And he knew when he seen some talent in somebody, he knew the sort of the best way to get out of them and not to make them complacent, even though they knew they sort of had that there.
Okay, cool. And obviously, you mentioned there about traveling the world before the age of 20, and you had your call-ups to the national teams as well throughout your youth career. How many times was it you played for them? I'm
Think I've
sure
got,
I'm sure you've got it logged away in
yeah,
there.
I'm sure it's between about 20 or 30 appearances for Scotland, but I played for Scotland from under 15s all the way up to 21s. So I had a pretty good upbringing in terms of that as well. That was fantastic to grow as a footballer as well, because international football is different from club football, and learning different styles and different formations, a lot more tactical, especially at a young age when you've not really got that much of an understanding to get exposed to that sort of stuff. I found it really interesting. Some boys would just go and play and it wouldn't really affect them, but I like to see the sort of ins and outs of football and seeing different styles and coming up against different nations was really good.
So where, what sort of places did you travel to, representing Scotland?
Generally, it would always be through Europe with Celtic, so we've done loads of trips to Belgium, Germany, Holland, France. With Scotland, we've done loads of Scandinavia because we used to play the Nordic Cup. So we've done like Norway, Sweden, Finland, all those kind of places. And then with Celtic, we had a couple of really good ones. I mean, we opened the Aspire Academy in Doha
Oh,
in
wow.
Qatar. So we went out there a couple of times because then we ended up having a little affiliation with them. So I ended up going over three times as a player. And then my fiance, her dad actually works over there. So the last few years we've always been going out there. So I've had a wee affiliation to that country, but that's some place out there, the Aspire Academy. And that's probably one of my life goals to maybe potentially work there one day. It's a fantastic facility.
Well, are you excited? As you mentioned, Guitar, are you excited for the World Cup coming up
Yeah.
in, what is it,
There's a lot of
12?
skeptics out there. Yeah. But I honestly see, because I know the country and I've been out there a lot of times, it's going to be brilliant. It's going to be unbelievable. And there's a lot of negative press out there, but trust me, see if anyone who goes and anyone's experienced it, their mind will be blown by how amazing the country is.
Oh, it really is. And it's going to be quite hard to get our head around the. Is it 80 kilometers every stadium's going to be built within? So the infrastructure is
Yeah.
going to be absolutely immense,
So
I imagine.
my fiance's dad helped build all the tram works that connects all the roads and stuff like that. So hopefully he can help me get out there and try and watch some games. If I'm not too sure what's going to happen with like the lower leagues, if they're going to stop for the World Cup or whatever, but if I get the chance to go, I would love to go.
You'll be having a word with a few people then to try and make sure
Oh
the
yeah.
lower leagues get postponed.
Yeah.
It's
Try my best.
certainly going to be interesting. And hopefully, of course, Scotland will be there playing
I
as
hope
well
so.
as great, great performances just last month, obviously, to
Yeah,
get through
we've
to.
got to the Euros, so next step is the World Cup, hopefully.
Happy with the draw?
It's a favourable draw, but it's hard. It's still quite hard. We've still got Israel in there, and there's nations that are sort of similar level to Scotland. So yeah, we could do it. But we've got to be very wary of the opposition, I would think.
You mentioned there about the changes. Were there any countries in particular when you're traveling with the national team or with Celtic, were there any styles of football that you really enjoyed coming up from a tactical point of view?
Always found that when I was younger, we used to play a lot of games against Dutch teams like Ajax, Anderlecht. They were religious 4-3-3 right from as soon as you could play 11-a-side football. So it was like 12, 11-year-old kids, and just the tactical knowledge that they had to play a system was far superior than us. We probably had better individuals because I was lucky enough my youth teams were very successful, but the way they played the game and the way they were structured was totally different to what we were used to. We were just 4-4-2, out you go, on you go and play and try and express yourself. But they had a bit of tactical knowledge about them. Probably the best team I played at that level, gone through. We played the next gen series with Celtic when I was sort of under 19s, played against Barcelona, and they were like unbelievable, streaked ahead of us in terms of the tactics and the players. And we came across some South American teams in various tournaments that we went to, and again they were so well drilled.
I could imagine the touch on those boys as well with the ball was absolutely incredible to watch.
Yeah, some of them were fantastic, like really, really, really good to watch. And so you see some players during these tournaments and they're like, wow, he's going to be like the next Messi. And it's just like sometimes this doesn't happen for them for whatever reason, but they've come up against some good players during my time. Like,
I can imagine. So, yeah, moving on, obviously, you said there it kind of all happened before the age of 20. Then it was coming to sort of times when you were probably looking to make your breakthrough into first team squad and senior football. And you had to move away from Celtic. When did that come about? How did that come about?
It was when I was 20. So I went all the way through the system. And the last sort of almost 2 years of my time at Celtic, I was up playing mostly reserve football, going out on loan a couple of times, and I managed to get in around the first team. I was on the bench a couple of times, but that was how far I got. And it got to the stage where the club decided to move me on because they felt there wasn't going to be much pathway there for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a case of getting out and moving on and trying to forge a career for myself, which is very hard for a young goalkeeper.
Oh, it certainly is, certainly is. You went down to Rochdale, didn't you? How did you find Manchester?
It was brilliant. I loved living there. It was really good. But it was just a case of when I was leaving Celtic, that was probably when your stock's high as a footballer. Obviously, leaving one of the biggest clubs in the country and in the world, I would say, you not realise until you're within it, you don't realise how big they actually are. And I thought a lot of players in Scotland work their full careers to get a chance at going and playing in England. I had a couple of trials lined up in England, so I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go for this. Never had a family or anything like that at the time. I still had my girlfriend, which is now my fiance now, but that was the only real ties I had. So I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to try and get a club down in England. And I was lucky enough to win a contract with Rochdale, and it was certainly eye-opening in terms of getting down there, because when you leave a big club, you're almost sort of brainwashed to become like, I'm at Celtic, I'm this, I'm that. And it's just when you're involved in that environment, it's an elite environment. These players are playing in the Champions League. They're winning week in, week out. And you just sort of go along with it. And it's not until you leave, you realise how hard it actually is to forge a career in football. Mm-hmm. I signed for Rochdale and I was sort of very naive to think, in Rochdale, I'll play there, no problem. I'll get a good few games in this season. And when I went down there, the level of player I was playing with was just like, I never expected you guys to be that good. I was playing up against my fellow goalkeeper was Josh Ullis, mm-hmm. who's played in the Championship level in England. And he was at Rochdale at the time. He was the number one and never really knew much about him until I went in there and trained. And seen him play, I was like, I've got a bit to go here. And it just made you realise that it was a really opening experience to make you realise how good you actually need to be to make a career in football.
This, Robbie, this is one of the things that I hear a lot of discussion about for young players coming through it's that debate about playing in the youths against going out on loan and playing adult football and getting the experience of the clubs. As someone who's done both, you've had a lot of experience in the youth, but you had those two years out on loan?
Last season at Celtic, I went out on loan a couple of times.
Yeah. Which route do you prefer? Do you think it's more beneficial to get the experience in senior football?
At Celtic, I was fortunate that in the youth level, we come up against some really good teams. We play a lot of good tournaments. A lot of the friendly games are really good against English opposition. At that time, the reserve league was actually pretty strong. So you do get a lot out of that, but nothing compares to first team football. And I went on loan to Scottish League One and Scottish Championship when I was at Celtic. And just when I came back into that environment of being a youth team player, a reserve player at Celtic again, it felt like I'd done that. And because I'd experienced first team football, I just wanted more of it. When you go back and you play reserves, it doesn't feel the same. Because when you get used to that sort of winning mentality and you're playing in real important games that boys need to win for their bonuses and for all that kind of stuff, it gives you that little bit of fire that you want. Whereas reserve teams, you might come up against some really good teams, some really big clubs, but it doesn't have that sort of that fire behind it, if you know what I mean, that actually means something.
I think very well said there. As someone that hasn't played the game, it's hard for me to comment, but I do listen to all the different arguments on the different sides there. Moving down to England, obviously, the styles of football are reasonably similar, but did you notice any major differences coming down to the English leagues?
Yeah, massively,
Yeah.
massively. In terms of just the amount of games. So generally in Scotland, even in the Premier League, Celtic and Rangers are slightly different. They've got European ties and stuff, but generally there is a few midweek games, but they're not majorly often. But I just found that the travelling, the training structure and the amount of games was different to what I was used to. So we would go away, we would travel on the Friday. Sometimes we wouldn't even train on the Friday. If we're traveling a long distance, we'd play the game, we'd come up, and because sometimes the traveling was quite a lot, we would get a lot of recovery days. We wouldn't train that much because you had so many games coming. If you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, you'd be in, you'd do a little bit on a Monday, you'd have the game Tuesday, you'd recover Wednesday, you'd do a little bit Thursday, a little bit Friday, and you're away traveling again and you're playing another game. So I was sort of on the bench, I was the number two goalkeeper. And for me to really try and impress in training was tough because the volume of training, the amount that you actually train isn't that much. It's just solely focused on the games. And so much of your time is taken up by traveling and staying in hotels and things like that. And it was a good experience. I would like to go and do it again as a number one. I think you would get a lot out of it if you're playing week in, week out. But it was tough when you're not playing in England to get a rhythm going because, like I said, you don't really train too much. And there is a lot of traveling and there's loads of games going on.
You mentioned your father, obviously, earlier, who had a long, successful career as well. Was he giving you any advice at this stage? At
Yeah,
all?
my dad was still as brilliant to me. I speak to him day in, day out in football. But he was never one of those pushy parents, especially as a youngster. You see a lot of the parents at the sidelines shouting on and stuff like that. I was fortunate enough that I had a really good support network of coaches at Celtic in terms of goalkeeping coaches and outfield. You never really have to get involved in that sort of side of things. So he could go at it from a more of a father's point of view and keep me right in sort of that sort of terms. But throughout my career, there's been more downs and ups, and my dad's always been there with fantastic advice, and I like to think that he's helped me a lot throughout my career.
That's good to hear. As you said there, after a year, you chose to leave Rochdale, or you moved on, came back home to Scotland. What was it like then coming back? But you were at Cowden Beef, am I right, first of all?
Yeah, so it got to a stage in my career. So I was 21, 22, and I'd only really played about 10 first team games. And for respective clubs looking at you, when you see your CV and it looks good, being at Celtic, played in England, blah, 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 but I've only got 10 games. It was like a lot of teams aren't going to take the chance on you when they could go and sign somebody else that's maybe got 200 games under their belt. So it was just a case of me coming back up to Scotland and try and get a platform to play. And I was lucky enough at the time, Cowden Beath were full time and they were in the Scottish Championship. And at that time, we had Hearts, Hibs, and Rangers all in the league. So it was a very competitive league and there was a lot of good teams in there. And for a young goalkeeper at 21, 22, it was actually a really good platform to go and get my 30, 35 games under my belt. And it was probably one of the best things I've ever done. Although it's maybe not the biggest club in Scotland or whatever, but for them to give me a chance to go and play was something I'd be forever grateful for. And it was one of my dad's old managers, Jimmy Nicol, that gave me that platform. And it was, although we found it tough and we done well at times, but a lot of teams were stronger than us and bigger than us. But to go out there and play every week was invaluable. And the confidence that Jimmy Nicol gave me and the experience levels and the grounding I got from that was, you couldn't buy that sort of experience.
I tell you, apologies to people listening to this, but I've just realised something. Were you at Cowden Beef with Kane Hemmings?
No, he was a season just before me.
Ah, right. Sorry, Tamworth fans, if you're listening, because he's a local boy to me. He came through the Tamworth youth settle before.
A very good player.
He certainly is still playing very well. Come back to England, of course, now. But I just, Penny just dropped on. I had to ask you if you're in the same season.
Right club, just a year out.
The mighty blue Brazil. Now, you have to, I was talking to Callum at Dundee a few weeks back, and he mentioned is it the stock car racing at Cowden Beef?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's it like playing on the pitch there when the stock cars are?
It's an interesting stadium. If anyone's out there that's never seen Central Park, I would go and Google it. But you've got the football pitch in the middle, and you've got a race car track around the edges, and you've got like big white tyres that separate the football pitch from the racetrack. Oh, and sometimes when you're playing, you were playing with some ball boys that were like maybe 6-7 years old, and they were taking forever to try and get the balls back in to get the game restarted again. And sometimes the balls would go in the tyres and it was a nightmare to get out. And it was interesting. It was an experience anyway. I remember turning up to training one Monday morning, and it was after the Caravan Derby that had been on the racetrack the weekend before. And before we started training, I had to pick up bits of caravan for the pitch. It was mental.
Superb. Is it the... Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that you can show up for training or games at times and the cars will have done donuts on the pitch and you've got all the pitches destroyed from.
There's been a few tyre marks on that pitch, let me tell you. You'd be finishing the game, the final whistle would blow, you'd be in doing your team talk and you'd be getting ushered out of the stadium because the racing's coming in.
Oh, and wow.
That part of Scotland, the racing's really, really, really big and you actually get quite a lot of crowds. And just get you in, get you out, and get the race cars in.
Well, I guess again, we're going to have a little talk about sort of the community values and that, and the Cowden Beef. If it's a big money spinner, then all credit to them for reaching out to the people there. Then of course, you're talking about the championship and Queen of the South have been pretty steady championship team now for a number of years. What was your year like with them?
It was good. It was really good. Actually, I earned that move through really good performances against them when I was at Cowden Beef.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a young manager at the time, James Fowler, who's now the sort of football, head of football at Kilmarnock. And he took me there. He took a chance on me. He was just a young manager at the time. And I really enjoyed it. He gave me that responsibility again to go and be a number one in the championship. It was really good. I worked with Kenny Arthur, goalkeeping coach there. And again, that was a fantastic experience because there was a lot of good senior professionals there. And again, it was a good platform to go and play because we still had Rangers and Hibs still in the league. So still got to play Ibrox and Easter Road and there was a lot of good games. It was a good grounding again.
And what was it like, now be honest here, having spent so long at Celtic, going as an opposition goalie to Ibrox when they were a championship club? Was there a certain sense of smugness at all or anything like that, that they were there?
No, not at all. Like it's not until you experience an environment like that you realise how amazing it is.
Yeah.
Like when you're turning out, you're walking out in front of 52,000 people in a stadium, it just, until you experience it as a player, it sends you to another level. Like I like to think off the pitch I'm quite just a normal guy or whatever, but when you're thrusted in that environment, it's like unbelievable. Although I was playing at a championship level, but to experience that is second to none, and hear the noise and just as a person, as a mindset, you just go into a different place.
Yeah, I I mean, you say you mentioned the championship there. It's a great, absolutely fantastic league, so competitive. And, you know, after the Rangers sort of Hearts and Hibs era, Dundee, how many years were Dundee United in the league before they managed?
About 3 years to get out. So it's a hard league to get out of.
It really is. It's so competitive every single year. You've come. Does it feel like a homecoming coming to Raith after your dad spent so long there? How did the move to Raith come about a couple of years back?
After I left Queen of the South, I had a couple of spells, different spells. I was at Hamilton in the Premier League, went there, and then I went to Falkirk, which is my hometown club, mm-hmm. That's where I'm from, and it was really good there. So again, it was another good strong championship clubs, and I ended up racking up a few more games. So there was a new manager came in at Falkirk and decided to move me on, so which was fair enough. And the opportunity to come to Raith came about, and it was obviously we've got a connection with my dad being there. And generally when I've ever came up playing against Raith, normally the opposition goalkeeper playing against the team gets dogs abuse, but it was one of the only stadiums where the opposition goalkeeper would I would get around the applause going into the goal because of what my dad done in the past. So automatically I had a wee connection with the fans, and coming to Raith was Raith Rovers was one of my first ever memories of football when my dad was there.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed as a good fit for me, and it just felt right signing for him.
I can imagine, definitely. What's it like in Kilkaddy? Kilkaddy, sorry guys.
I'm not an L in it. It's this season.
I tell you, I can't show my face up there now. Anyway, I'm going to be in trouble. But what's the bond like there? You say you talked about the fans. You know, what's the relationship like between the fans and the club?
I think throughout the past at Raith, since they had that success period when my dad was there winning the cup and playing in Europe, there's been a few ups and downs. There's been financial difficulties. There's been a lot going on at the club. It's a fascinating club, what's went on in the past. But it's a really big club. Mm. And they've got a lot. There's a very big fan base. And the Fifers, they love their football, and there's a good rivalry between, Raith Rovers, East Fife and Dunfermline and teams like that. And it's a really good sort of close-knit club, and the people that are close by and the Raith supporters, they go all in, mm-hmm. and they're really passionate about the club, and it's great to see. And they're just hungry for so many years that they've not had Premier League football. They've been about championship level, and I think it would mean so much for them if maybe one day we can get back up to where they should be, because if the fan base definitely matches. Same with Dunfermline as well. There's two big clubs in Fife, and they've both got really good fan bases, and it'd be good for the sort of area and the community to get both of their clubs back up to where they should be.
Definitely, definitely. What, if we look at it from sort of both angles, let's take the club first of all. You know, what sort of things did the club do to support the town there? You know, did they get out into the schools and the community and get involved, shall we say?
We're lucky enough, we've got a very good AstroTurf pitch. So it's not mm-hmm. just your general AstroTurf, it's like your 4-5G, it's brand new. So we get a lot of the local teams coming to play on our pitch, which is really good for them. And that automatically gets a connection going with the local teams in the local area. There's a big connection with the schools, and there's loads of summer camps and school holiday camps that bring the squad and the kids and the schools all closer together. I think recently they're trying to do a lot of stadium redevelopments at Starks Park, mm-hmm. and looking to build a community hub, which would be great for the town and in the local area, which would bring a lot of people together. Maybe there's a lot of elderly groups walking football and sort of pensioners, and just try and get them in. But in terms of like the lounges and stuff on match days, there's a lot of supporters clubs that have got their own lounges at the stadium, and they're really passionate about the club, and it's great to see. And as players, we're always happy to help them out in terms of making a little appearances and sign shirts and things like that. And it is a really good club, and the people that are close to the club have a really good connection with the players, and we're always happy to help out.
That's good to hear. What was it like then? Obviously, the pandemic has hit us this year, and it's changed things. You know, podcasts have took off universally during as a result. But for you personally, what was it like then, when the lockdown kicked in and the league shut down, and how did you keep yourself motivated?
Well, at Raith Rovers, we were one of the beneficiaries of the lockdown, because we were in League One and we were top of the league at the time. But in Scotland, they decided to call the leagues early. And where you were placed, that's where the league finished. So by merit, we were top. So the league ended, and we ended up getting promoted to the Championship on the back of that. So as a club, it was really good for the club, because we moved up a league. It gave us a chance to go and progress, because obviously we had budgets for League One and stuff like that. And when we got the promotion, it allowed us to sort of move forward a bit more and try and progress more, whereas other teams were sort of halted by the pandemic. There was so much uncertainty, but we actually benefited from it, and we were better off financially moving up a league. So it allowed us to build a little bit more and try and build a competitive squad for the Scottish Championship, because, like, it's a strong league.
Oh, it certainly is.
In terms of the club, it was good, because it allowed us time as well to get that in place, because obviously football stopped for a good few months.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of me, I'm a very busy guy, and I'm a stickler for hard work, and I used the time really wisely during lockdown when I couldn't go into training, I couldn't go anywhere at all. I looked at it from a personal point of view, and I've got my own coaching business. And I looked at all the little things I could do with this spare time to really maximise my own potential, improve my business, improve my physical well-being, improve my mental well-being. So when football did come back, I was in a really good place to hit the ground running.
That's great to hear. Lots of positive stories have come out of this time, alongside a whole world of negativity. But it's great to hear so many people have used this time to reflect and be very productive. You've mentioned your coaching business. What kind of triggered the inspiration to start that off?
I've always been interested in coaching. Ever from a young age, I've always took the lead on training sessions. So maybe when there's not been a goalkeeping coach present with myself, he always put the onus on me to go and, like, don't just mess about. When you get told to go and warm up as a goalkeeper, go and take ownership and go and put on a proper session. So ever from the age of about 9 or 10, I've always done that. And it was after I moved back up from England, me and my two friends started up our own coaching company called Pro Performance Academy, specialising in lots of things. And now I've sort of branched out to Pro Performance Goalkeeping. So I solely run the goalkeeping side of the academy. And it's went from strength to strength, and we're actually one of the biggest coaching companies in Scotland at the moment. We cover everything. So we've got the goalkeeping side of things. We've got the outfield side of things. We do small group sessions. We do sessions with teams. We do club sessions. We do camps. We work with external sources for mindset development. We work for external sources for physical development. We've got partners in physios, we've got sponsors, we've got loads and loads and stuff going on. So we're doing a lot for the younger generation to try and give them that extra platform to go and really improve as footballers. So it's been really successful so far. I think we've got about, along with the three sort of heads, we've got about 15 coaches that work for us as well, and two venues. So there's a lot going on. It's really exciting.
Oh, that's great to hear. I mean, you said that you mentioned a couple of things there, mindset and the like. Even at your young age, what changes have you seen in the game, especially with working with youngsters from when you were a youngster coming through? Have you seen any changes at all?
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough at Celtic to have some fantastic coaches, and I was always surrounded by the best players in Scotland. So in terms of that, I had a really fantastic upbringing, but definitely these days it's not as harsh as what it used to be. There was a lot more criticism going on when I was younger. There was a lot more discipline. There was a lot more structure. These days things are changing a little bit, which is modern times, and you've got to accept that. But I would say there's definitely now more acceptance now that, and there's more realization now that young players need to work on their mindset. Coaches can't be as hard on players because it might have a long-term negative effect on them. So it's about sort of developing the player and the person a bit more now rather than just focusing on football.
Yes, I mean, and that can only be a positive in the long term as well, not
Don't
just
get me wrong, there is sort of some negatives because the grounding I had as a younger footballer in terms of discipline, having to do jobs and the responsibility of you never done your jobs and you would get punished for not doing them. Sort of gave you a good grounding as a footballer moving forward and just as a person moving forward. A lot of kids in academies haven't got that now. It's almost like a free ride. They don't need to do any jobs, don't need to clean boots, and they don't realise how good they've got it. So there is some negatives to the side of it, but no, the game definitely is changing and it's evolving. It's becoming sort of better and the players and the coaches that realise that and move with the times will get the benefits from it.
That's a good thing to hear, though. It's coming back though to Rafe, and as you know, we all hope, even though we talk about some of the positives that have occurred for people during lockdown era, we want the lockdown to end, and we want fans back in stadiums, and we want people to have the freedom to travel around and experience all these great clubs and great communities. What would people who aren't from Fife, aren't from the region, what can they expect if they come up for to catch a game, to for a Rafe, a typical Rafe home game when it's full of fans?
I definitely think they would enjoy it because Kirkcaldy is quite a close-knit town. There's a lot of the people from the local area come to the games, so there's a good positive atmosphere. But generally, crowds-wise, we're quite a well-followed club, so the atmosphere is generally pretty good, especially in the Championship now that you've got a better away following. We've got quite a big stadium, so generally, if there's a big away following and there's a strong home following, you'd be up about the 4,000 or 5,000 mark. Which is good. It's a good environment to play in. I've almost forgot what the buzz is like to play in sort of behind the in front of crowds. But no, I think as a fan coming over, it's one of those grounds that's a traditional Scottish footballing ground. There's a lot of character to the stadium. It's a bit different, and there's a good community feel to it. And it's a well-supported club, and the fans are quite vocal and they're really passionate. And they've got a young group of fans that provide a bit of atmosphere, which is really good. I love to see that. It's sort of almost like a young ultras group, which are really good. And I think that's fantastic because a
That's
lot of teams
cool.
in Scottish football that are sort of introducing that. And it's brilliant to see the young kids getting involved in the game. And as players, it makes a big difference. And it's great to see. So I think anyone coming along to Sarts Park would enjoy it.
Oh, that's good to hear. That is good to hear. I'll hopefully be one of those myself. Now you've played in obviously in League One, the Championship. You've had some SPL experience, and as we spoke about earlier, the experience at Celtic where you've travelled extensively. Are there any stadiums in particular, it may be because of the character or because of the size and the, you know, just the sheer enormity, are there any stadiums that particularly stand out that you've played, visited?
I would obviously say the three main ones in Scotland I've been lucky enough to play it would be Celtic Park, Ibrox and Hampden. They're all fantastic. I would probably, in terms of atmosphere, I played in front of a few Ibrox, which was really good, but probably the best outside that I played in the mini Nou Camp when we played against Barcelona. So it's like the Camp Nou, just the other side of it. So it's like the first two tiers.
Oh,
I
cool.
played in the Philips Stadion in Holland for PSV and played against them. That was quite good. But probably the best stadium I've ever played in would be the Khalifa Stadium. That's in Doha. That's when the see where Liverpool played the World Club Championship in Doha. I played in that when I was at Celtic, and that was a unbelievable stadium to play in. The changing rooms, the facilities, the infrastructure that was part of that's part of the academy, the Aspire Academy in Doha. So you get changed and stuff, and there's like underground passages that go in at the stadium. It's unbelievable. If anyone that's not really familiar with it, I would Google the Khalifa Stadium in Doha and have a wee look, because it's I think it's based a little bit on Wembley as well. It's got like the Wembley Arch.
Oh,
It's
cool.
I think it's about a 40-50,000 seater stadium. It's something else. I was lucky enough to play in that.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think although, as you said, I mean, I know Doha has had a little bit of negative press. I still think there's going to be a lot of people scrambling for tickets
Oh,
in
I'd
November.
highly recommend to get out there for that. I think it's going to be amazing.
Maybe one myself. Who knows? Who knows if I can be as lucky as I was in 2018.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rob, I've really enjoyed listening to your story today. It's been great. Thank you for giving us your time.
No problem.
Now, if people, you mentioned your coaching company there, so I'll give you the opportunity to just plug the website and app for people who may want to have a quick look.
Well, my coaching company is Pro Performance Goalkeeper Academy on Facebook and Pro Performance Goalkeeping on Instagram. We've got Twitter as well, which is Pro Perform GK. So they're the sort of the main avenues that you can go and check us out on. There's a lot of goalkeeping content that goes on there, and we've got Pro Performance Academy as well, which is sort of the outfielder stuff there if you want to check that out as well.
Oh, fantastic. And if they want to just get in touch with you for a chat anywhere else where they can contact you at the club or things
Yeah.
like that.
I've got my own Twitter, which is Robbie Thompson GK. I've got Instagram, which is Robbie Thompson 93. And I'm sure if anyone got in contact with the club himself, the office staff would pass on their message. So I'd be more than happy to have a chat with anyone wants to be bored by me.
Certainly won't be that. Anyway, so well, that's it, everyone, for today. Thank you for listening, giving us your time as well at home. I'm Adam at Ukrafoot24. You can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter, and most social medias. And this has been another podcast for Shoot the Fence. Till next time, everyone, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now.